issue before us today is the supplemental benefits system of the state of Alaska. This is a work session. We do not have a bill before us. We have asked the Commissioner for the Department of Administration, John Andrews, to join us today to give the committee a briefing on how the federal government would like us to change our system. And Commissioner Andrews, if you'd like to join us at the table, please. It's a pretty important issue to the employees of the state of Alaska, and I think most of us have had a little bit of contact with the SPS system, but what we need to learn about is what changes are being proposed or may be proposed and why.
Hey, those people are doing a great job on that committee. Oh, yeah. Thanks for your support.
Madam Chairman, for the record, we have a record.
We are on the record.
For the record, my name is John Andrews. I'm Commissioner of the Department of Administration. We have a change in the Federal Tax Reform Act of 1986 that places the current SBS program in some jeopardy with respect to the tax deferral status of contributions to the annuity funds that each participant owned.
That's
a bad word. And also the pre-tax purchase of insurance premiums. The current SBS plan provides that the state and the employee each contribute 6.13% of the employee's gross wages to the plan, the one plan. Then each employee may elect to use some portion of that money to purchase insurance coverages supplemental to the state's health insurance plan. The remaining balance of the state and the employee's contribution goes into the annuity portion of the plan. The federal tax law now requires that the plan, I'm going to give you a short version, okay, that the annuity plan has to be separated from the insurance purchasing portion. So we really need two plans. It can no longer, the employee's contribution to the annuity can no longer be discretionary employee to employee. It is currently discretionary in some sense now because they can elect to use some portion of the money to purchase insurance, thereby defaulting to an election of how much they contribute to the annuity. Under the new law, the employee's contribution to the annuity has to be beyond his control. It doesn't have to be the same for each employee, but it has to be beyond the employee's election. Now, in the proposal we're about to lay before you in the sponsor substitute, the House Bill 252, it will not be the same for each employee. The difference will be by the date of the hiring of the employee. Employees hired after, I think it's March 1st or March 31st, 1986, are required to contribute 1.45% of their salary and the state likewise to the federal government for the Medicare portion of Social Security. We view this as the first step in having Social Security reinstated upon us. Eventually, that 1.45% will apply to all employees as all employees become new in the sense of hired after 1986. The proposal that we will lay before you is that the state will 6.13% of the employee's gross wages minus whatever the federal government mandates that we pay for Social Security. Likewise, the employee will pay 6.13% of his gross wages minus whatever the federal government mandates that he paid toward Social Security. And all of that money will go into an annuity that can subsequently be drawn out by the employee upon his separation. Along beside that, there will be a menu of insurance benefits that employees can purchase with pre-tax dollars, money spent by the employees electively to buy that in various kinds of insurance coverage would be in addition to the fixed amount of money contributed to the annuity account. and absent any insurance purchases, would be in their gross wages and taxed and eventually in their take-home pay. So we will have two plans instead of one. We will have a fixed annuity contribution that over which the employee has no discretion. And we will have a parallel insurance purchasing plan over which the employee has absolute discretion.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Donnelly.
Could you run over there's going to be a state contribution to federal Social Security now? Could you explain that to me?
This has been going on now for a while. For employees hired after March of 86, the state and the employee are each required to pay 1.45% of their Social Security wage base, the $45,000 limit, right, to the federal government. And that is for the Medicare portion of Social Security.
So that doesn't, the only way I've got to relate to this is our own paychecks. It doesn't show up on ours because we all started at least in January 86, is that why? I've never noticed it. So it's for new state employees.
Exactly.
Just to follow up, though, I thought I understood you to say that it was going to eventually be required of everyone.
That's really our hunch. Is that
I see. It's not currently a part of the law that we're going to phase everyone in, but you're projecting that that's going to happen.
Eventually, all the employees of the state will have been hired after 1986, and at least that 1.45% will be there for everybody in theory eventually.
Oh, I see.
But from what I understand, it's our days of exemption from Social Security generally are numbered in sort of people's minds. So.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The original separation of the state employees from the Social Security system, was that somehow by federal statute, or was that a constitutional question based on the sovereign rights of the state?
As I understand it, it was an option that state and federal employees at that time could elect if they wanted to, and we all had a chance to vote on it for a while. And if the employees themselves voted to remove themselves from Social Security and had in place some suitable alternative, as judged by the federal government, then we were allowed to do that. And we had an election on that. All the employees voted to move out. This federal employee subsequently got asked to come back in, got ordered to come back in.
Through the chair, my question really dealt to the issue of states' rights. It seems like in the constitutional system of government that we have here, there should be some rights reserved to the sovereign states that the federal government shouldn't be able to take away. And I remember back from law school days talking about that one of those rights the state should have is in determining how they best determine how to deal with their own employees and to provide for them. And I realize that the concept of state's rights is basically come into serious disregard by our present federal Supreme Court. But that it seems like the constitutional argument could be presented that the state should be have the autonomy to do what it wishes with its own citizens as far as how it employs them for its own governmental operations. Otherwise, the federal government's interfering with state government operation to an improper extent. And I was wondering if the state had, or if other states were developing any, if there was a propensity for a constitutional question coming before the federal Supreme Court on that issue. States would file suit and saying that this was an improper exercise of federal judgment. Of course, that suit would be filed with the U.S. Supreme Court directly. It wouldn't go through the appellate process.
Representative Menard and then Representative Martin, but if you have a response to that, go ahead.
I think I do. I'm not aware of any such issue evolving out of this, but I suspect there would not be one because the point in question is the exemption of these funds from federal income taxes, which I would presume the federal government would retain its interest in, no matter what we argue in terms of state rights.
Okay, just to clarify, my point dealt with the withholding for the federally imposed retirement system, Social Security. That's what I was really focusing on, not withholding for taxes.
Representative Rock, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. If I understood you right, you said on the withholding there was the 6.13% contributed by the employer, and then the 1.45 by the employee, or was that twice? That would you re-clarify that,
surely,
please?
Both numbers apply to both sides.
Both sides, okay.
The employee, the state pays 6.13% into the annuity, and the employee pays 6.13% into the SBS plan, the way it stands now. And for those employees hired after 86, both the state and the employee pay 1.45% to the federal government.
I see. Okay.
So it's 7.5 something.
Representative Martin.
I want to bring up Representative Dolly's point of view. I think we'll have to go way back into the time the concept was developed. And I think the Secretary of State at the time, name was Sherman, under Roosevelt. And it was a very good plan under the concept developed during the Depression to make sure that people would have some kind of income when they get old. Congress passed and everybody accepted, except for two things that Roosevelt would do after they refused to accept. One is that they can earn interest on the money. He refused to do that for some reason or another. And secondly, that other government bodies can draw from that without paying back. So because of those two, the whole concept of having a full pension was bound to fail. Government agencies drew from it and paid back. And there was no interest. Now, the question on private public rights agency pouring out got to be at least 10 years ago, Sherry can bring this up on this year, where public agencies, cities and states, can develop their own program for pension funds for their citizens. And if they did that, they could pull out of the Social Security because they could provide better for those citizens in old age than the federal government proved itself to be. However, that was taking a large segment of the population out of that pool of people in which Social Security was to be developed under, and those who were most steadily employed. Private citizens couldn't pull out of it. Now, a private employer and so on, so you treated your people differently. If you work for government, you can be pulled out and you get a better plan. Work for private enterprise, we don't care what you're doing as a citizen or the employer to go for you, you can't pull out of Social Security, someone's got to pay for it. So I think there's a major question of the state sovereignty of all its people, not just those who are employed under public sanction. I would agree with you, we're being forced and people are forced into paying for the future years, but it's proven worthwhile. It's just that we got to get Congress and other people to not misuse the funds as they come in. And of course, the benefits have been expanded to your children, your grandchildren, and all kinds of people that didn't put into it in the first place. So the two concept has been demolished as far as self-survival. I don't know if we have a constitutional question that you can defend all the citizens.
Commissioner Andrews, I gather that the point of the federal change is to make certain that the SBS system, whatever it may be called in other states, provides for the long-term retirement benefits of employees. That is their preoccupation.
I presume so.
Making certain that the annuity portion is guaranteed. And so toward that end, they don't really care what we do with optional coverage above and beyond the annuity. They're just concerned about making certain that there's that both the state and the individual contribution to an annuity to provide for people's old age. Is that accurate?
I think so. They do have some things to say about the insurance purchases. They prescribe the kinds of things that they have to meet certain criteria, and I think there's a dollar limit involved. It can't be more than $500 worth of stuff a month or something. But I think you're correct in their attitude about the annuity portion, that if they don't want to continue a situation where the employee can, by his own discretion, not participate and end up with nothing.
Mm-hmm. And the hammer is the fact that the benefit would not be, it's not a tax-deferred benefit associated with the withdrawal from one's check. I mean, the state of Alaska could conceivably go off and say, we don't want to follow the federal government, but that it would be a significant loss to the employees in terms of the tax deferred benefits.
Yes, and possibly retroactively.
Retroactively as well.
You might be presumed to have substantially gained ownership of the funds you have in there now all in 1 year. Mm-hmm. It's scary. The difficulty, that much of it is pretty simple. The structure we're proposing for the new plan is fairly simple for the two parts of the plan. The difficulty is in setting the values associated with the variables, how much, what percentage should the state contribute, what percentage should the employee contribute. Should we use the Social Security wage base still in computing any kind of maximum on the dollar amount that percentage applies to? And we are content to leave the state's contribution as it is at 6.13%. While the state has no direct interest in what the employee's contribution is, we have to decide what that is in law. The bill you will receive as the sponsor substitute has the employee's contribution to the annuity set at 6.13%. That's we had to put some number in there. We used that because that's what it is now, and it's a good place to start discussions. But that is a real variable. We'll talk about that for a minute, if I might. If that number remains at 6.13%, then all of those roughly 2,000 of the 12,000 participants who are not buying any insurance with SBS money, putting it all into their annuity, like me, I'm one of those 2,000, we won't notice any difference in our gross pay or our annuity balances. But those other 10,000 employees who are buying some level of insurance out of their portion out of their 6.13%. Now, in order to maintain that insurance coverage, would have to take that as an additional deduction from their gross wages. They'd still be able to buy it with pre-tax dollars, but it would have an effect of reducing their take-home pay in some portion. Now, if you reduce the employee's contribution from 6.13% down to some other number, then you will still find employees who are spending more even than that for insurance, unless you just take it real low. Conversely, you will find employees then who have what they might view as an unfortunate increase in taxable income, where they view SBS as a way to defer income to future years. They would have an increase in their taxable income and their take-home pay as well. There remains the deferred compensation plan that would help those people out if they chose to participate in that program as well. They could still have another way to defer income if they're not already using that to the maximum as well. So that's the only awkwardness in the situation before us is arriving at that number for the employee's percentage contribution to the annuity plan. We're looking at the data. We looked at a period of paychecks during the last calendar year, and gathered a lot of statistics on what employees' current patterns of activity are. Who's buying what kind of insurance, and what's their salary level, how many dependents do they have, what bargaining unit are they in. We've got a lot of that kind of data gathered, and it doesn't present a very clear picture in my mind at all. It's all over the map. Everybody's got a different idea about how to spend their money to buy insurance. There tend to be some patterns. Young people with young kids buy things differently than people who are about to retire. We had um, puzzling and puzzling with what kind of number to settle on, we decided, well, maybe that isn't even our job to try to do. Maybe we should ask the employees what their sense of preference might be, knowing in advance, I think, that we're going to get answers all over the map again, just like their current purchasing practices are all over the map, so will their attitude be all over the map, but they're hard to ask. And that's where we leave it today. We have not asked. We are prepared to ask.
But simply put, right now, all we're addressing is the Medicaid aspect of one's program in the future.
The bill you have before you, left over from last year, addresses only that point. The sponsor substitute that you will receive, I think, should be introduced Friday or Monday. Will contain that same provision as the existing bill and add to it the separation of the plans into two parts and an expansion of the value of insurance coverages that can be bought under the cafeteria plan as well.
So with the substitute coming up, basically, I would go for your best judgment and people here get what you have, and then let us give you a green light. That it's up to you to explain it to all the employees.
Sure. Yeah.
Other committee questions? I think it's a good idea to ask the employees what they think, and I would encourage you to do that. Even if you don't get a high percentage of returns, and even if the returns that you do receive are all over the map, I think it probably is another useful step in the employees understanding what the problem is and why some action must be taken on it and what the options are. So I don't know what the timing is on that or how expensive it is for you to do a mass mailing like that or anything else, but I think it's going to be really important for employees to understand that this is not being done simply because the state of Alaska thought it up, but that it's being done to try and protect a very valuable right, pre-tax benefits associated with the plan.
Just one last question. Do you have a time, certain limit in which the government, federal government, is saying you must act by?
January 1st next. We have to have in place a verified, that is to say, they sanctioned by the federal government. They have to look over our plan and say, yes, this meets our criteria.
So we have to act as such in the legislature.
If no action happens this legislative session, we will be on the defensive January 1st and with a weak case.
Thank you, Commissioner Andrews. Are there other people here, Sherry Shelley, or anyone else who would like to speak to the committee? And thank you, David. Commissioner Andrews, we may come back with some additional questions.
Okay.
If you could stay with us, that would be great.
That's
fine. This is just a work session.
Yeah, well, I'm going to get some information. So
great.
My apologies.
I'll come visit you.
Yeah, okay. No, I'll read this carefully. I've read it carefully already.
Thanks. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Sherry Shelley with the Alaska Public Employees Association. And the FBS program is something that's very dear to my heart and probably APEA's. When I was initially hired 10 years ago, the reason I was hired was to lobby for legislation to get employees out of Social Security. And at that point in time, the legislation that was passed, Governor Hammond had submitted a letter taking employees out of Social Security, and the legislation that was passed said, we will put employees will be given an opportunity to vote. We will either be in the Social Security program or we will be in the SBS program, but we will not leave our employees in a vacuum. At that time, the percentage of Social Security was a 6.13% employer and employee contribution. We tied the amount or the Social Security wage base and used that because we figured that that would be a way to protect the system from inflation, that wage base would increase over the years and therefore it would the amount of money going in for employees would increase. I think that argument is still valid and we shouldn't look at changing the Social Security wage base. APA is somewhat concerned about the 1.45% being taken out of the employer's contribution. Right now, the state is contributing 1.45% for employees hired after April 86. Those employees are also contributing. So if you take the SBS contribution that employee is making plus the 1.45, it comes out to, I think, 7.58 that the employee is now contributing for SBS and Social Security. What the state is telling you is that they want to, in essence, keep their contribution at 6.13, and they don't want to make that additional contribution. The state has saved millions of dollars in the past 7 years by having the SBS program, because the 6.13% of their contribution has been significantly less than the Social Security contribution. But you are, in effect, for employees hired after April 1986, reducing those people's benefits by 1.45%. It would seem that it would be appropriate, since the employees are required to pay the additional amount, that the state required be required to pay the additional amount, or at least pay up to the Social Security percentage contribution. Taken to its extreme, what the state is proposing is that if the Social Security system increased over the years so mandatory contributions were 6.13% above the current level, there would be no employer contribution to the SBS system. Now, I know that's taking it to its extreme, but we don't think that employees hired after April 1986 should be treated differently than those employees hired before. So we objected last year to the original concept of this legislation. However, we realize that the SBS program does have to be changed for tax purposes, and we support those changes. APA would ask that this committee set the format of the ballot rather than leaving that ballot to the Division of Retirement and Benefits. At the time the legislation was passed, employees, at least our organization, in conversations with legislators, had numerous discussions about just allowing the employees to have that benefit in take-home pay. APA, as well as other employee organizations, rejected that argument. It is conceivable that if a ballot is structured and it says all 6.13 goes to gross pay and not to the annuities, that many employees, because it has been a long time since the cost of living adjustment, if the young employee population will vote, in fact, for today instead of their future for tomorrow. So APA would like to see a ballot, but we would like to see a ballot say that maybe puts all of it in, and then maybe as one option, and the other option being what the average cost of insurance is, and according to Mr. Dillon, I believe, in the commissioner's office, it's about 1.6% of payroll. Employees have been balloting on a number of issues recently. They are suffering from ballot fatigue. I know when they first voted to get out of Social Security.
We didn't call it.
I wish I could say I didn't either. But when they voted to get out of Social Security, I spent 3 months going to almost every job site in this state, along with a Social Security advisor, along with Al Buffone, who was opposed to getting out of Social Security at the time, and to explain what is happening to employees. It's a very complex issue, and they don't understand. And I'm not certain that just mailing a ballot out with just basic information, you know, people will vote maybe for the take-home pay, and maybe that isn't in their best interest, and that's why we would like to see the committee look at what are some reasonable and appropriate choices that protects all employees. And we're certainly interested in letting people have the opportunity to buy the insurance.
Thank you. Representative Martin.
Well, thank you. I don't know if this pat on the back or if it's an easy way to get out of the problem, but I don't know why you would think that this committee of avid citizens, which we are at, would be any more intelligent to put forth a ballot question to the employees more than your professional organization or the administration, and why you two can't get together and make what you think is a fair ballot question. It would take you 3 years just to educate me on the problem.
I've got lots of time.
At the same time, we had this time restraint by the federal government, and I don't know if your organization would be willing to protect the state legislature from any fines or whatever the state may receive because we don't implement what is congressionally mandated at this time, is it not? Congressionally mandated? Strangers? Is this congressionally mandated now? At this time?
Yes,
it's congressional act, isn't it?
Right.
So, I imagine this is going on all over the nation with local governments as well as state. state government that had pulled out, and that there must be a more reasonable solution rather than getting up ballot questions that are confusing. You said that you had the job previously of explaining it to your people and why it would be beneficial withdrawing. I think as a representative of your people that it's mandatory upon you, whether the administration takes it on their shoulders or not, that you're going to have to explain even what the legislators did.
If I could respond, Representative Brown, APA will certainly be active in explaining this piece of legislation. I guess what we would ask is, since this is a legislative-created program, it's set in statute, it is not one negotiated, APA doesn't have any more rights, really, to go over to Department of Administration and demand that this or that be on the ballot or even ask. It is in the purview of the legislature, and I think it's important for this committee to set up the guidelines as to what that ballot might be. Do you really want people to take what is was intended to be retirement income and take it today? Or do we want to look at the interests of the lower paid employee and the higher paid employee and give one of the options, and I think the options should be fairly limited to two or three, so that everyone is given an opportunity to have the insurance so that maybe 4.5% goes of the employee contribution goes into annuities and the other 1/6 is left for insurance purchases if the employee wants to take it. I think those are some philosophical questions that are probably better addressed by the legislature than the commissioner.
Do you have proposed programs that we can present to the people? Or put in legislation? I mean, we only got them.
I would be happy to put something together, sure. But we do understand that this has to happen in the relatively near future.
Any other questions, Representative Arduin?
Just one magic. On this, these monies that are going into the annuity plan now, now those are separate from the Social Security system the way it sets up right now.
That's right.
But when we mandate, will it just be the 1.45% that will be going into the to this federal Social Security system, or will it be the 1.54 plus the 6.13?
As I understand it, right now the state is contributing 1.45% into Medicaid. The employee is also contributing 1.45%. Under the legislation as proposed, the state's contribution to the supplemental annuity, even under their change for the tax, the 6.13 will be reduced by any amount mandated by the Social Security system. So if next year the Social Security system mandates another 2%, then the state would be taking 3.45 out of the employer's contribution to the annuity. And that would be for, if the 2% was for all employees, then that would be for all employees. And that would just automatically happen without anyone ever having an opportunity to look at it.
So, in other words, the 1.45 goes to the federal mm-hmm. government for Medicaid.
Right.
6.13 minus 1.45, which is about 4.67, stays in the state annuity plan, which is matched by the 6.13 that the employee contributes,
right,
which is the state's SBS annuity.
So over the course of time, as the commissioner said, eventually everyone will be hired after April 86. The state will have effectively reduced their contribution from 6.13 to
whatever that reduction is.
4.67 now, but
could be something else.
Could be something else. Representative Martin.
Thank you. Is there a possibility that there's an ulterior motive that you want something that the state will continue its benefits into the annuity benefit program for the employees, plus they will increase whatever Social Security demands? So in the long run, is it possible that the state will be paying in both parts, and in the long run the employees will benefit because nothing comes out of theirs? In other words, you don't want anything taken out of the benefit part, the 6.2 we put in now. You want the state to pay whatever addition goes into the federal Medicare?
Well, I think in this particular case, since the employees are paying it, I think it's appropriate the employers take it. What I really think is I don't want to see, there's no ulterior motive, I'm real upfront about it. I think I would like to see that if, say, Social Security says the state has to pay another 3%, that we come back to the legislature and look at it and decide how that should be paid. And maybe it would be appropriate at some point in time to change the SBS system. But this doesn't require any further look by the legislature. It just happens, and the employer's contribution is reduced. And we don't have any way to bargain on this.
I don't think it should be at the bargaining table on this, not... we get, always get to pay the bill. This time you want us to do the bargaining.
It is a legislative program that covers all employees, not just union employees.
Yeah, but you're the one that advocated it 5 years ago. What was it, 8 years ago?
Any other questions for sure? I guess I'd just like to think about your suggestion that it should be a committee instead of, or an addition to DOA, and I guess I'd just like to talk to the other committee members in DOA about that.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to shed a little light on the SBS system today? Any other questions? Yes, Commissioner Andrews.
If I might, I'd like to make a point of clarification and some expression of some rationale behind our 1.45 proposal.
Excuse me. Sure. Would you mind coming back to the table just because our system doesn't pick up your sound?
We're going to close meetings.
On the record, right?
John Andrews again. I sense there's a little bit of confusion about the combination of Social Security and SBS payments. Under the current statutes, federal and state, both the employer and the employee follow the same set of rules. For new employees, the state pays 6.13% into SBS and 1.45% to Social Security. So does the employee. The employee pays 6.13% into SBS and 1.45% to Social Security. The cost to each is 7.58%. Unfortunately, the employee has to pay that 1.45% with after-tax dollars, which is a federal restriction that I don't understand, nonetheless. And in our proposal, the same parallel structure would hold, that the state's payment of 6.13 would be reduced by any federally mandated Social Security payments, and likewise, the employee's payment of 6.13% would be reduced by any federally mandated Social Security payments. So it would be the same for both sides. We had three kinds of ideas in mind behind the future adjustment of the 6.13, and that goes like this. It costs the state about $40 million a year to pay that 6.13%. So it's not chicken feed, okay? The 1.45% differential for the current set of employees hired since this date in 1986 amounts to about $2 million a year. These numbers are in your fiscal note. The idea behind that automatic sort of exclusion is to put some kind of cap on the cost to the state of personal services. It's part of that trying to keep a lid on something that could run away from us beyond our control. We'd have no control over what the federal government says about mandated Social Security payments. We're trying to arrange the structural environment so that those expenses are capped no matter what kind of crazy thing they do in Washington. That's the idea behind it. Also, for the individual employees, it's a mixed bag in the sense of their attitude about it. While the state would be contributing 1.45% less to the employee's annuity account, so would the employee. And so the employees hired since 1986 would actually show an increase in their take-home pay by this move. And for many employees, that would be very attractive. They also have a decrease in their real wealth, in some sense, of their long-term wealth. Would be less, but their take-home pay would go up. And so I think you're going to find a mixed reaction amongst employees toward that. Not everybody's going to automatically see it as a decrease in wealth. Some of them are going to see it primarily as an increase in take-home pay, money I expend today. Third, I this relates really to the first one of getting a cap on the cost. If down the road the federal government removes our exclusion from Social Security, we would then, without some kind of automatic reduction of the SBS costs, we would end up supporting both of them. Both the employee and the employer would end up supporting both of these things. We'd each be paying between 10 and 15% into something. And that just seems like overkill to me. I don't think that's necessary for either the employer or the employee to buy into both SBS and the Social Security system beyond their control. Anyway, they might want to do that selectively, individually.
Couldn't we change the program if that happened?
Well, sure.
It's hard to imagine what the federal government is going to do and try to cover all possible contingencies, but it just seems to me if the federal government decides to, again, change the rules of the game, so to speak, that then the state has the option of, at that point, choosing a different system.
That's correct.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Jim. Since a number of local governments have bought into my plan, as a state plan, as I understand it, what kind of information needs to be sent to local governments about this change? And with the time which Grant joined us, is there some kind of a way that your agency with the APA can begin informing the public where the employees who are going to be who right in the middle of it without knowing it? How can we inform them that you say they're going to be choosing options all over? We don't necessarily have the time. But is there a possibility with APA and the administration saying, hey, come on, you know, we know these are the most rational ways to go about it. These are the things that probably should be given out to the people to have a preliminary understanding of what's before us and why Congress mandated this. And these are the simple options and not the 250,000 options. It just seems to me that I don't think we're in a catch-22. I think that, you know, it's fair that part of the program that the state has been paying for and the employer to be paid for, then 1.5 goes to this aspect of the federal government for Social Security. I don't have any qualms on that at all. I do have qualms when I think that maybe APA, and I may be misunderstanding this from Michelle, that they want the state to continue what it's paying in the state program plus pick up the Medicaid for the employees, and that to me is going to be an additional benefit without really bargaining for it. But the main thing is our time is starting to express that, you know, people will choose all kinds of options. Can we limit those options and tell them what's reasonable and educate them as soon as possible?
That's our intention, exactly, to narrow it down to a few representative choices that will give us a sense of where the bulk of the opinion falls anyway, and to get that information distributed to all the participants in the plan and to all interested groups to whom there are likely to go with questions. So we have invited all the union groups to come and hear briefings on the matter so that when their membership comes to them and asks questions, they'll know what's going on, and the personnel officers, and I think municipalities and all that too. Have we done anything on that?
There's currently 7 municipalities, of which 3 of them are.
What you are right now thinking about in terms of a draft ballot or a letter, and allow us the opportunity to maybe make some comments and think with you about, you know,
right,
how to structure it, if you don't mind.
I can give you a copy of the draft we have so far.
Okay.
Right now.
Great. Thank you very much, one and all, for coming in this afternoon. We will be, of course, discussing this more this session, but it was a useful beginning of this discussion, so thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
State Affairs Committee is
I think it's going to be longer, worse than it's going to be.
Don't say that, Terry.